Hello, I'm John Rossi, a touring drummer with a love of all things animal. When I'm on the road, I visit as many zoos, aquariums. Hey, wait a minute. What's going on? Hey, what's going on there? Hello? Hello?
We interrupt your regularly scheduled program to bring you Rossafari Zoo News. News you can use from the world of zoos and conservation. Every week, we bring you breaking news and analysis from around the globe, featuring the animals you love and the people who care for them. And here's your anchorman, John Rossi.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to Rossafari Zoo News, your look at everything going on in the worlds of zoos, aquariums, conservation, and general animal weirdness. Excited to have you back for another episode. For those of you who may be new listeners, this is Rossafari Zoo News, and it is a crowdsourced news program, meaning that if you see anything zoo newsworthy, you can send it to me through email, rossafaripod@gmail.com, or on all of those lovely social media sites where I'm sure you're already following along, but if not, you should do so. At Rossafari on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, and at Rossafari Pod on TikTok. You may notice that my voice is either a little more radio DJ than usual or just a little raw. That's because I have a little bit of a cold. Don't worry, it's not the COVID. I have officially been tested. That's what my voice sounds like this week. And also, going along with that, I apologize if you hear any weird background noises. I'm doing what I can editing-wise. But I am currently at my hotel for my gig in Florida. And it's a lovely hotel, but it's not the quietest one I've ever been in. I'm right near the dumpsters and where people are apparently going outside to smoke. And even though I've turned off my air system, it keeps making little noises, and I can hear them. Hopefully you can't. I don't know. Anyway, I wanted to talk about something that we've been talking about a lot in these intros, which is this whole idea of whether or not it's okay to post pictures with animals and such. Now, look, I know what you're thinking, probably, which is, holy crap, this is now the third week that we are focusing on this topic in the intro to Rossafari Zoo News, and that is a lot of time dedicated to a topic. But if y'all don't know that I fixate on things yet, then you have problems. But beyond that, in this case, I actually had something really cool happen this week that I wanted to share with all of you. So I've been talking about this study that I found in school and how I've let it affect my logo and everything. And as I was discussing it with my classmates, one of them reached out and said that they have done a study and are currently working on getting it actually published that has some very different results than what I saw in the previous study that I shared with all of you. So the study was done by my classmate, Nicole Schaefer, who is awesome and allowed me to share a little bit of the details here, but she is hoping to get it published, so I'm not going to go into a ton of detail. But basically what she found was that in looking at elephant sanctuaries, so remember the last paper was orangutan conservation organizations. And basically what the findings were was that the best thing that you could do is to have baby animals, like juveniles, babies, etc., and also people in them. People interacting with animals was highly successful as well. So I'm not going to give any of the actual statistics because this thing needs to get peer-reviewed and published and is awesome. But literally, in case y'all are forgetting the orangutan study, the exact opposite of what that study found. Now, both studies were very limited in what they looked at, and there's still a lot more data out there and a lot of number crunching to be done. But I will say that Nicole did a heck of a job with the statistical analysis. I read through the whole paper, and my eyes were watering at times. It was very impressive. There are charts and graphs and all kinds of cool stuff. So first of all, thank you to Nicole for sharing that with me and allowing me to share that with y'all. And second of all, this just goes back to the thing that I keep saying when it comes to conservation research. I think there are so many factors that go into conservation stuff, whether it is a social media presence or like how to save animals in the wild, that you can find studies that will back whatever you want. Or more likely, you won't find any studies. But if you did studies, you could get different results. It's frustrating. It's confusing. But it also means that there are a lot of cool opportunities to experiment and see what we can do out there. And we all know that as a species, we need to be doing more. So, I guess that is a good news thing and a good way to look at it. And this will probably be the last time that I talk about whether or not social media pictures of baby animals and also of humans interacting with animals is okay or not. But at least you have a lot of stuff to consider as you look at your own Instagrams and such. You're welcome, question mark? All right, let's get to the zoo news. Oh, actually, I lied. Before we get to the zoo news, I'm going to be doing a relatively shorter section of zoo news and conservation news and all that stuff today because we have a very exciting thing happening on this episode of Rossavari Zoo News, which is an interview. So this past week was the IMATA ABMA conference. Now, IMATA is the International Marine Animal Trainers Association, and you already know that ABMA, or ABMA, is the Animal Behavior Management Alliance, and they have been on the podcast before, and that's the semi-recent episode with Shane Gorbett from the Columbus Zoo. Well, our good friend and recent guest, Kaylee Innes, was one of the people who attended the conference, and she and I hopped on a Zoom the other night to do a little debrief on the conference. So rather than me share extra stories this week, I'm going to share some stories, and before we get to them, I'm going to let Kaylee tell you what that conference was like. Enjoy. All right, so welcome back. Tell everyone who you are.
Hi, I'm Kaylee Innes. I'm from the Wild Mountain World Zoo.
Yeah, and from a recent episode. Welcome back. How's Crockett doing?
Crockett is doing amazing. I haven't seen him in like a week and a half. So.
Oh, that's so sad. I bet he misses you.
I know. I miss him.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. I miss him. I've only hung out with him twice, but I miss him. So that's all right.
I know. When are you going to come back and see him?
I am working on trying to get out there later this year. Yeah.
Good.
Conversation on that episode where we were like, hey, I should come out. And Krista was like, yeah, come out for a week and work with us. I think we're going to make it happen. No promises, but I'm going to try. Yeah.
That's so exciting.
Yeah. So we're here today, though, to talk about the recent IMATA / ABMA conference. And you got to go. And I'm so excited for you. So tell me what it was like.
Oh, my gosh. It was an incredible experience. I have only been to one IMATA conference in the past. And it was, oh, my goodness. 7 years ago now. So it was really awesome to get to go again. And it being joined with ABMA was super fun. There was a lot of people. I think at one point somebody said there was like 500 attendees there.
Wow.
It was insane. But it was so cool. So registration in the icebreaker was last Sunday. And then last week was the full conference with the banquet Friday night. But Sunday during the day, Ken Ramirez had two workshops, beginning training workshops and then advanced training workshops. And I was grateful enough to go to those as well as the rest of the conference. So it was a lot of absorbing like a sponge, but so many cool presentations from terrestrials and aquatics and marine mammals. And it was incredible.
That's so cool. And let's talk about it a little bit. Tell me like what one or two of your favorite sessions that you attended were.
So I have three presentations that stuck out that were my favorite. One was acupuncture with penguins, all voluntary.
Wait, what?
Trained voluntary acupuncture with penguins. It was incredible. So amazing.
Oh, that's so bad.
Another was voluntary chiropraction with giraffe. I don't know if that's how you say it, but yeah.
Okay.
That was incredible. And then the other one was stretcher training with hammerheads, and that was with the Georgia Aquarium, when they were transferring their hammerhead sharks from their offsite area to their new shark tank that they have. And that was really fun because hammerheads have to continuously swim to breathe. Right. They're those kinds of sharks. So that was really interesting to see how they worked it.
Very cool. And they are only the second aquarium in the U.S. to actually have great hammerheads, with the one anchor at Adventure Aquarium right outside of Philly being the first. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, it really is. Their new shark exhibit at Georgia is awesome. And that's the thing. This was in Atlanta, right?
Yeah, it was in Atlanta. The host facilities was Georgia Aquarium and Zoo Atlanta.
Right, which are both awesome, awesome places.
Yeah, we got to go to both of them.
Okay, nice. Mm-hmm. Nice.
Yep, we got to go to both of them, and it was so much fun.
That's awesome. Was it your first time at the Georgia Aquarium?
Yes.
Was your mind blown?
Yes. My favorite part, I'm obsessed with manta rays, so I love getting to see the whale sharks, but getting to see the manta rays, I almost cried.
fair. So I had never heard of the Georgia Aquarium the first time I played Atlanta, and I went to Zoo Atlanta, and then I was like, you know, it was a nice zoo. That was before they even had the Africa section, so it was like a small zoo. I loved it. Had a great time there, and then was like, oh, what am I going to do for like more time before the show? And I was like, well, I'll look up, oh, hey, there's an aquarium here, cool. And I went, and I had no clue what it was going to be. And I immediately went into the Ocean Voyager area, and I went in, you know, you go into the tunnel first.
Yeah.
And I looked up, and a whale shark and manta ray were above me. And it is the closest I have ever come to, like, breaking down at a facility.
Oh, my gosh. Like, that is
I didn't know those were in the U.S. I was like, holy shit, like, wait, what? Like,
that is incredible.
It might be my favorite single memory of like showing up at a facility, because just like in terms of just like, I had no clue.
Right. That's so amazing. Just to be like, you're not expecting it at all and just be blown away like that. I can't even imagine.
Yeah. Just insane. So, what did you get from those sessions? Like, how does this help you as a trainer? And did you send yourself to this conference, or does Wildlife World send you? How does that work?
So thankfully the Wildlife World Zoo sent me to the conference. So that was really amazing for them to be able to do that for me. They also sent a coworker of mine just from another department. And basically the way that it's set up is you're all in this big room and everybody gets up to present, you know, one at a time for their allotted time slot. So it's kind of just watching all these different presentations. And whereas, you know, I'm with marine mammals, so sometimes the animals that are being presented on don't necessarily correlate with me. It's the training and that kind of aspect that you can bring back to like my animals and implement those, or just learn about really cool things that people are doing with different kinds of animals as well.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Why? Let me ask you this. Why is it worth it for Wildlife World to send you to this conference? Because it's not cheap. And then there's like travel and like hotel and all that stuff. What do you share it with your team at all? Or is this just like you're that much better of a trainer now? Or did you just like rig the system?
No. So it's really amazing that I get to bring back to my team things that I learned and things that we can share with our animals, and even trainer development that I can share with them as well. But not only is it able for me to learn more and me to teach my team more, but it allows our small facility to network to other facilities and create those relationships. So that way we can be in communication with them. And just, this field is so small, even though we are so widely spread out amongst everywhere. So there was people from Rome and from Sweden. And so we get to connect with those guys. And it's really incredible because we wouldn't have an opportunity otherwise to do that.
Yeah, that's really special, actually. That's very cool. Awesome. What would you say is your biggest takeaway from the conference?
Oh my goodness. I honestly don't even think I could pick one, because there is just so many like little bits and pieces of training and everything. But I don't even think I could settle on one. I'm still trying to like absorb and process as I like type up my notes for my team that I'm like, oh yeah, I remember this.
Oh, that's awesome. That's really cool. Yeah. I do like that you said that you're a small facility when you're not a small facility. I've been to your zoo. You're lying.
Okay.
Us with our area. Six aquarium buildings and our 800 million miles of stuff.
Our area might not be small, but we are not that widely known amongst everywhere else.
No,
okay, that's what I mean by small.
It just made me laugh. I was like, oh yeah, the place that you literally can't do in a day is this small little facility. I was at a zoo today that is a 1 mile loop. The whole thing is a 1 mile loop. So no.
That's not us. That's a fraction of the Wildlife World Zoo.
Oh my gosh. So do you think, let me ask you two questions. Is this something that people should be going to? Is this something that animal care professionals should be going to?
Absolutely. So IMATA is the International Marine Animal Training Association. And then ABMA is Animal Behavior Management Association. So IMATA is mainly marine mammals and ABMA is going to be like terrestrials and things like that. So it was really awesome that they did a combined conference because then we get to come together. But I definitely think whether you're marine mammals or anything, whatever kind of training you do with animals in the zoological field, I think it's a really great community to be a part of. And there was also a lot of people that want to be in the field. I met a girl that's still in high school at the conference. You know, it's a really good networking opportunity, as well as people in the field to learn, people not in the field to learn, different things like that.
That makes sense. That you actually kind of just answered my next question too, which was going to be, is this a good place? You know, should I go next year? Should people who aren't fully in the field go just to learn more about training? And
yeah,
apparently even high schoolers.
Yeah. The next year's IMATA conference is going to be held in San Antonio.
Ooh.
So, facility is, San Antonio Zoo, I believe. I'm really bad with remembering names. And then, of course, SeaWorld San Antonio. So.
Right. And for ABMA, it's going to be in Nashville next
year.
Yes. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Very exciting stuff. Yes. Cool. I have one other thing that I'm curious about.
Okay.
I know that so many of you end up because, you know, your facilities are spending a lot of money to send you there. So a lot of you end up with roommates, including roommates that maybe are people that you didn't know beforehand. Mm-hmm. And because we are friends outside of this podcast, I saw your stupid sappy post. So tell me about your roommate situation.
So I roomed with the girl that was sent from my facility as well. Her name's Kim. She works in our Ambassador Animal Programs. So I knew her, but we don't work directly together. So, you know, that was nice day to know her better. But then we, on the first day, became friends with these couple of girls, and we just clicked, and we spent the whole rest of the conference just hanging out, going to lunch together, dinner together. And turns out they actually didn't know each other at all when they roomed together. They just had a mutual friend. So that's kind of what your experience that you're talking about. So they just met through Zoo Creepers, which is the Facebook community for everybody in the zoological field. And they were roommates, and then we got to meet them and hang out with them. And it was so amazing. I didn't expect to make like lifelong friends, but that's exactly what I met with those girls. So it was so fun.
That's awesome. And I feel like that's what a lot of the conference is.
Absolutely. A lot of it is networking and getting those connections in, either in professional or personal. And it's incredible. Really great opportunity for a lot of people.
Nice. And it ended with an award ceremony, which included a dance I saw. Were you busting some moves?
I was busting some moves. I got out on the dance floor and enjoyed myself. It was so much fun. They played great music. I'm going to tell you that. They played some great hits. They played Backstreet Boys.
Nice.
NSYNC, ABBA. I was like, heck yeah, let's go.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to do this.
Thank you for having me. I always appreciate being on here.
The Dr. Juan A. Rivero Zoo in Mayagüez, which is in Puerto Rico, which is the only zoo in Puerto Rico, is being shut down. Federal authorities started a probe into multiple investigations into Puerto Rico's Lone Zoo. However, they are dropping their charges in exchange for the zoo closing down and its over 300 animals being transferred to zoos and sanctuaries on the U.S. mainland. The animals there were clearly not being well taken care of, and this was the easiest way out for the zoo. And it also means that the animals will get out right away. You may wonder, well, why am I excited about the fact that charges are being dropped and investigations are being stopped into these zoo animal abuse issues? Well, the answer is that all of those investigations and all of the legal wrangling would lead to the animals staying at the zoo until everything is settled. So while I hate to see people get away with mistreating animals, I'm happy at the end of the day that the animals that are still there will be transferred out right away. So to me, that is a big win. And speaking of wins, only this one is of the happier variety, I mentioned a few episodes ago that there was the possibility of baby sea dragons at New England Aquarium because there were eggs for the first time, and that was pretty darn exciting. A male weedy sea dragon would be the one carrying the eggs in this case. Welp. 8 weeks later, the eggs hatched and the aquarists have been raising 20 sea dragon hatchlings behind the scenes. This is the only time that leafy sea dragons have been bred in captivity, or I should say the first time, because now that we have a plan in place, now that we know how to do this, maybe it will continue. But this is just a really, really cool, really exciting first out of New England Aquarium. In particular, sea dragons have an elaborate mating ritual where they swim side by side as the female transfers her eggs to the male's tail to fertilize and then to carry them. The amount of daylight, water temperature, nutrition, and tank size must be just right for the animals to be successful, and even then, the eggs may still be dropped or end up unfertilized. That's all according to New England Aquarium in their press release, and yeah, they clearly nailed it. So congratulations to New England Aquarium. That is huge news. Lehigh Valley Zoo recently announced that they have received a new resident, Piper, the North American river otter, who came from the Maryland Zoo in Baltimore. Their otter exhibit at Lehigh Valley Zoo is really awesome, and it is a huge draw, so this is a big deal for the zoo. Piper is currently on quarantine, but then will be joining up with Luani, who's been at the zoo since 2017. Now, I want to be clear for those of you who are Elmwood Park Zoo fans, this is not that Piper. There's more than one Piper out there in the river otter world. So yeah, but this is really exciting news for this zoo that you may just be hearing more from very soon. Some cool in situ conservation work out of the Columbus Zoo. They have announced that one of their veterinary technicians, Dan Wallen, will be traveling to Canada to assist with the recovery effort for the endangered southern mountain caribou. It's the same species as the reindeer found in the zoo's North America region, but it is a different subspecies. There are only approximately 1,200 southern mountain caribou in the wild right now, and Dan will be working with the Arrow Lakes Caribou Society to provide veterinary care to a herd of caribou maintained in a maternity pen as part of a recovery program in British Columbia. I love these kinds of stories so much, and good luck to Dan. That's just awesome. And props to the Columbus Zoo for allowing Dan to go off and do this incredible thing. The Potter Park Zoo in Michigan has announced the birth of a bongo calf, also known as a bonglet on this podcast and only on this podcast. And frankly, that sounds like some small device used for smoking marijuana, but that's besides the point. Yeah, but so the bonglet or calf is doing very well and is already walking around and enjoying its life a bit. They have not named it yet, but this is only the second bongo to be born at Potter Park Zoo, and it is the second in 2 years, so that's a really big deal. Yeah, so congrats to everyone at Potter Park Zoo. Our friends up at Roger Williams Park Zoo in Providence, Rhode Island are inviting you all to Party on the Planet on April 1st this year. This is an opportunity to go out and to experience some really fun times at the zoo. It is a family fun event for everyone where you can learn about the importance of protecting the planet, see the amazing animals, and have a good time. So if you happen to be in the area, check it out. The WCS, or Wildlife Conservation Society, which is the organization that runs all of the zoos in New York City, except for the Staten Island Zoo, along with the aquarium there, and also does global conservation work, got some good news this week of a different variety than what we usually expect for a zoo. Moody's Investor Service has revised WCS's outlook from negative to stable and affirmed its A1 rating. Without going into a ton of detail on this, what this means is that Moody's had listed them as negative because zoos were so heavily affected by the pandemic. However, now that they have a good rating again, it will lower the costs of borrowing money to put towards conservation efforts. It's also an indicator that the WCS, now coming out of the pandemic, is starting to turn the corner on financial stability. Moody's goes on to explain that even though visitor levels are not back to pre-pandemic levels, the visitors that are going are actually spending more money than visitors used to, and because of that, the WCS zoos are doing well. So this is a great bit of news for zoos in general and for the WCS in particular, as well as for the improvements that the zoos need to make and the conservation efforts that may need some cash influxes from time to time. The Greensboro Science Center has announced that Holly the hippo is pregnant. Now, Holly is a pygmy hippo, and it's really, really exciting that she is pregnant, as she is one of the animals in their new Revolution Ridge expansion. And I gotta tell y'all, I just got to spend some time at the Greensboro Science Center, and it is a really cool place. I actually got to see Holly. I did not know that I was seeing a pregnant hippo at the time, but I'm very excited to follow this journey with Holly and her eventual hipplet. I'm actually really excited about this next story. Cheyenne Mountain Zoo recently announced that they set a long-term goal of producing 80% of the lettuce that they need for their animals. They created a shipping container farm, and it has just recently produced its first crop, and it was wildly successful. The shipping container is equipped with the latest hydroponic vertical growing technology and an automated system that informs the team there of the specific needs for each plant species. So this is a great example of sustainable farming practices in use at Cheyenne Mountain Zoo. And it's just honestly really cool and really inspiring to see. What a great use of space, and what an awesome opportunity for the zoo to become more sustainable and ensure that their animals are getting the best quality produce. Unfortunately, sometimes growing plants doesn't always go as well. The San Antonio Zoo recently announced that on Wednesday, a large tree branch unexpectedly broke and fell onto an area where there were several guests who were injured by the branch. Zoo first responders and local emergency crews were on site within minutes and were able to treat the injured guests. And they're currently trying to figure out exactly what happened and how to prevent this kind of thing from happening again. But hey, sometimes branches break and fall. And when you're out in the wilderness, even the wilderness of a zoo, these things can happen. Adventure Aquarium has yet again taken their efforts to the outside world. I almost said to the streets, but technically that's not the case. But earlier this week was the International Day of Action for Rivers, and the Delaware River is basically the backyard of Adventure Aquarium. As such, the staff at Adventure Aquarium has been working on trying to help clean up the river, and they announced that in 2022, their efforts got rid of over 1,000 pounds of trash, including 22 tires. Now, keep in mind, these are aquarium staff members going out on their own time to do this and volunteer to help beautify the Delaware River. I find that absolutely astonishing, and there are lots of reasons that I love that facility. Many of them are turtle and hippo and shark related, but this is one of them as well. I am so grateful to have such an incredible facility in my home area. And then just a couple of quick bites here in Zoo News at the end. Amory, the serval, who we talked about as the cocaine kitty from last week, who was taken to the Cincinnati Zoo, has officially been added to their collection as part of the Cat Ambassador Department and is doing very well. Amory is still coming out of their previously cocaine-addled shell, but, recovery is going well. They are with one of the best teams at one of the best zoos in the country, and I cannot wait to see the end result of how this amazing cat does in this new, incredible, luxurious living situation. The Port Canaveral Aquarium has officially announced that it will be opening in 2024. So it's actually pretty rare nowadays to get new aquariums and zoos. And so this is exciting. It's going to be another facility in Florida, in Port Canaveral. And it is going to open not only with an aquarium, but also with a manatee rescue and rehabilitation center. So that's really exciting news because we need all of those that we can get. The San Antonio Zoo announced that Nicole, a female Asian elephant, has been transferred successfully to the Elephant Sanctuary in Tennessee from their zoo. This was the last elephant at the San Antonio Zoo for now. However, the zoo has announced that they are going to make a significantly better elephant habitat and then bring some new elephants into their collection. Kiska, the last orca living at Marineland in Ontario, Canada, has passed away at the believed age of 47 years old. Kiska was a controversial orca, even for orcas, which, in captivity are pretty controversial, because there have been a lot of complaints about Marineland, and a lot of people who are not your normal anti-captivity people were still not really pleased with Kiska's existence. So very sad to see Kiska go, but also maybe this is the time for Marineland to stop with the orcas. I saw Kiska many years ago, and it was really inspiring and beautiful to see an orca so close. But even I, who am not anti-captivity, even for orcas, I'm still working through some of my feelings on that. But in general, I'm okay with it right now. I was not a huge fan of that situation. So sad to see Kiska go. But also, maybe it's time for Marineland to be done with killer whales. Just a thought.
Conservation, news time. Oh, yeah.
President Joe Biden recently signed off on the Willow Project, which is a new drilling allowance to go after fossil fuels in places that were previously protected from this thing that is bad. It's really disappointing. I am really not pleased with this. It looks like the drilling that will start, because they have to do all kind of prep to actually start drilling, the actual oil won't begin to flow for roughly 6 years from now. So we are going to allow all kinds of degradation to pristine areas of the country so that in 6 years we can start getting more oil. We are less and less dependent on fossil fuels every single year. And 6 years from now, we don't know if there will still be the Russian-Ukrainian war, which is causing a lot of issues with our current prices for fossil fuels and stuff like that. We don't know what's going to happen with OPEC. We don't know. What we do know is that we are going to continue to increase our usage of and hopefully reliance on renewable energy. So the idea that we can do this damage to our environment to hopefully maybe lower prices in 6 years if this is still a thing, ugh, I am disgusted by this. I gotta tell y'all, I mean, I'm really disappointed in the president. I'm really disappointed in the Congress for allowing this. I'm really disappointed that this has gone through. And honestly, I was shocked when the Biden administration signaled that they were going to allow this to happen. I was shocked, and maybe I shouldn't be, but yeah, very displeased with that situation. For the next two stories, we're going to turn to some local conservation tips that you may need to keep your eyes open for. The Carolina Waterfowl Rescue recently announced that there have been a lot of posts online suggesting using yarn scraps, twine, or other material as outside nesting materials for songbirds. They go on to say that while the intentions are good, please do not do this. Birds should be able to find their own nesting material and do not need our help. If you insist on providing nesting material, please look for natural materials. Yarn and any type of string, twine, and even human hair can easily become tangled around bird legs, necks, and other body parts and cut off circulation, causing serious injury or even death. So if you have seen those posts and started to do that, please stop. And if you see those posts, also please comment and let people know it's not a great idea. I realize that it's the internet and you'll probably just get trolled, but hey, try to do the right thing if you can. The birds are depending on you. While we're on the topic of some local conservation stuff for your own little animals, it is starting to become baby animal time. Oh, I guess you could also call that spring. But yeah, it is the time where a whole lot of baby animals start showing up. And it's really important to realize that baby animals commonly found by humans are rarely orphaned. It does happen, but it's really, really rare. Oftentimes, wild parents, including but not limited to bunnies, songbirds, squirrels, foxes, raccoons, and deer, all might have to go off to hunt or do other things. And if you mess with those babies, you can cause a lot of trouble. So please, 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 just because you see what looks like a young, innocent animal that might not have mommy or daddy right there, I don't anthropomorphize here, don't worry about it. Trust that they are okay. If you're really concerned, maybe keep an eye on the area for a while, but if you do, do so from a distance. Maybe snap a photo if you have a really good telephoto lens, but the best thing that you can do is honestly just step away. Six new species of pygmy chameleons have officially been described in Tanzania's Eastern Arc Mountains. These pygmy chameleons are roughly the size of your thumb. And I find this incredible, not just because, you know, they found these or because there are six of these new species that were discovered at once, bringing the total to 26 species of pygmy chameleons, but just because it's still amazing to me that our world has so much biodiversity and so many areas that we haven't fully explored or that we haven't been able to explore deeply enough that we can manage to find six new species of one type of animal at once. What an amazing, amazing planet. Here's hoping the Biden administration doesn't try to do some crazy-ass drilling over there to hurt these new chameleons. Yeah, I know they can't. I'm just still bitter. And last but not least in conservation news this week, marine scientists are currently tracking a 5,000-mile-wide seaweed bloom in the ocean that is currently making its way towards Florida's Gulf Coast. Whoa, wait a minute. I am currently actively playing on Florida's Gulf Coast. That's kind of scary. I hope the seaweed doesn't come out of the water and attack me. Okay, no. That's actually not the problem. This is actually one of those weird things where you see something happening in the world that is not only crazy, but like has good and bad effects. I find this always so interesting when you see something like that. So first of all, this is believed to be the largest seaweed bloom in history. And it is a thick mat of seaweed and algae that, while in the water, provides an incredible habitat for marine life and is also really, really good at absorbing carbon dioxide. So having the largest one of these ever is really, really good news, right? Yes and no. Because while it is currently a really exciting marine habitat and helping us with our CO2 problem, as it gets closer to the shore, it blocks light from reaching coral, and then it starts to decompose, which has a negative effect on air quality and water quality, thus hurting all kinds of animals that are affected by those things, which are, you know, basically all of us. So it's really scary that this is out there and apparently sneaking up on me, even as we speak.
In other news,
let's talk idiots. Joe Exotic has decided that he is officially running for the presidency of the United States of America in 2024. And that is all I'm going to say about that. Also, there are two people that decided to go on TikTok and they started an account. I'm not going to say its name because, you know, screw them, but their names were Tyson King and Adam Joseph Choate, and I guess those are actually, you know, still their names. They are alive, but what they decided to do on TikTok was go and mess around with zoos and try to sabotage zoos and cause problems at zoos and then post it publicly because that's how smart they are, and you could, like, see their faces and stuff. Weirdly enough, these people have been arrested and charged. And no, none of this was like the stuff you heard about with Dallas or anything like that. It's completely unrelated, and these people are just idiots, and I hope they go to jail, where they can run into Joe Exotic, who is in federal penitentiary, even though he is running for the presidency of the United States. We live in the dumbest times. Speaking of humans that suck, a zebra owner in Ohio was shocked when his zebra, you know, the wild animal that he attempted to own, bit his arm. So he called the sheriff's office and sheriff deputies showed up and the zebra was continuing to act aggressively and even charged at the sheriff's deputies, who then had to shoot and kill the zebra because this idiot decided to own a zebra. Oh, and in case that isn't enough, a woman in Oklahoma is recovering after an unexpected monkey attack because she saw a monkey on her porch and then was attacked by it. Yep. Now, I will say that the person who was injured did not own the monkey and actually did the right thing and called local law enforcement and said, hey, we have a monkey sitting on our porch. So the officers showed up, and it was at that time that the woman saw that the monkey seemed to be friendly with the officers. So she went outside with her son, at which point the monkey charged her, crawled up her back, yanked out multiple wads of hair, and then ripped her ear in half. Ew. The monkey then ran off and eventually was shot and killed by a neighbor who heard the story. They don't know who the owner was yet, but yet again, another story of an animal who shouldn't have been owned, wasn't handled properly, got out, got shot, died, suffered, as well as in this case a human suffering, all because people want exotic pets. Stop it, dumb people. Like Joe Exotic, who is running for president. Just stupid people. Oh, and in Michigan last month, a teenage girl and her mother went to an exotic pet store and they bought a kinkajou on a payment plan, which is just You can do that apparently at the store. Cool. Kinkajou. Something that everybody should own, right? No, no, stop it. And so they went back then because the store does a sloth encounter. Of course they do. Of course they just have a sloth encounter at a pet store, right? Now again, I have done sloth encounters at so many zoos, did one on the way down to Florida, but these are well-trained animals and animal care professionals and all the things, and this was a sloth encounter at a pet store. And according to the pet store, the mother and daughter were poking and prodding the sloth and not following the rules of the encounter, and then the daughter got bitten by the sloth at a pet store. At a pet store where they bought a kinkajou. This is awesome, right? This is just such a great story. I'm so happy. So anyway, the sloth bit the girl. Don't worry, sloth doesn't die here. So that's nice. At least an animal didn't die because of human stupidity, but did have to be quarantined for 30 days. Now, as this was happening, the girl, who also had to get rabies shots and such, and her mother had their information posted on the pet store's Facebook page because they refused to provide proof to the store that they were taking care of the kinkajou that they had, you know, purchased on a payment plan. And the store publicly posted their information, including address and phone number, and offering a $3,000 reward for the return of the kinkajou until time-stamped photos of the kinkajou being taken care of properly were provided to the store. I can't with this. This is so dumb. So the family did eventually provide photos of the kinkajou in fine health, I suppose. And so the pet store took down the post, but it left both mother and daughter fearing that people were spying on them at their address and may even want to like break in and steal their kinkajou to try and get the $3,000. So yeah, this pet store publicly outed these people and listed their private information about a kinkajou that they purchased on credit, and then also had a sloth bite the daughter. By the way, the sloth was the favorite animal ever of said daughter, and she is now traumatized and is afraid of sloths and is afraid of the kinkajou and is afraid of even like their normal house pets. So lots of stupid people doing lots of stupid things. Oh, including the fact that Joe Exotic is running for the presidency of the United States. So many stupid people. And on a less stupid, but honestly, for the size of the company, still pretty stupid story, the Little Mermaid live picture version is coming out soon, and the poster was recently released. Now, it's supposed to be a story that takes place in the Atlantic Ocean, but oh my gosh, have they screwed up the various species of animals in the poster. There is a northern gannet from way further north than where the story takes place. There is a humpbacked wrasse from the Indo-Pacific. There is a diagonal butterfly fish from the Red Sea, an orange-lined trigger fish from the Pacific, a blue tang from the Indo-Pacific. We have emperor angelfish from the Indo-Pacific, lionfish from the Pacific, a sea goldie from the Pacific, a redhead earth eat cichlid from the Amazon, which is also a freshwater species, and an arapaima, which is also a freshwater species that would obviously not be found in the Atlantic, and masked bannerfish from the Indo-Pacific. And if that isn't enough, the crab species that they decided to go with for Sebastian is a red crab, which is a terrestrial crab that cannot swim and would absolutely be drowning or dead in the picture that shows Ariel with Sebastian underwater. So, look, I don't have any problem with the fact that Ariel has been cast as a person of color, which is the main complaint about this movie that I hear from chodes and trolls online. And screw all of them. Screw them so much. Screw them, screw them, screw them. Again, stupid people is the theme right now. But also, come on, Disney. You can do better than this. Couldn't you have consulted some experts? You literally have a huge conservation arm and an incredible facility in Animal Kingdom. Like, come on, do better. But hey, you're still better than Joe Exotic, who is running for the presidency of the United States in 2024. Stupid people. And we're going to end the other news segment with some non-stupid people. The podcast Radiolab recently put out an episode called Crabs All the Way Down, and it is two stories about crabs, one of which deals with crab evolution and the fact that when you look at the lineage of crabs, they have actually evolved five different times, like from five different previous species. That's really crazy. That means that there were five different species who have evolved into crabs because those species thought that would be the best way to survive. Maybe someday we will all evolve into crabs. I doubt that, but maybe. Yeah, it's a really interesting episode. So if you get a chance, check out Radiolab's Crabs All the Way Down episode. It does not feature any stupid people, such as Joe Exotic, who is running for the presidency of the United States in 2024. So many stupid people.
Oh, animal, oh, animal, animal holidays. Animal, oh, animal, animal holidays. Hey!
All right, and so we are still in March, which is both Dolphin Awareness Month and my birth month, March 31st. Don't y'all forget. I'm kidding. Kind of. Anyway, today is Friday, March 17th, as this drops, and that is nothing. But the 18th is Global Recycling Day. March 20th is both World Frog Day and World Sparrow Day. March 21st is the International Day of Forests. March 22nd is World Water Day, International Day of the Seal. And then the 23rd is National Puppy Day and World Bear Day and Chinchilla Day. And those are your animal holidays for the week. I feel like this always happens. I start an episode and I'm like, hey, we're going to be a little short this week, or I'm going to cut some things because we have an interview or whatever. And instead, the episode just goes long. So I hope you stuck with it. I appreciate y'all for being here. I appreciate my Red Panda level patrons, Laura Shank and Kristen Dickey. And don't forget, you can become a member of our Patreon and support the pod for as little as $3 a month. You can also support the pod by sending me stories for Zoo News, as did these people this week. Special thank you to Anya Keen, Colleen Lenahan, Kim Cooley, Carrie Kirkpatrick, Kevin Williams, Emily Rockbuck, Marianne Rossi, Liz Dunleavy, Laura from LE Artisan Studio. And if you have not checked out that artwork, go check it out at LE Artisan Studio. You can get stickers and all kinds of cool stuff. Our friend Sherry from the Lehigh Valley Zoo, Margaret Johnson, and of course, Kaylee Innes for appearing on the podcast. All right, friends, remember, the words newsy credits backwards are Stider Kiswen.
The Ross Safari Podcast is produced, hosted, and engineered by John Rossi. Editing and fact-checking by John and Dr. Zoe Rossi. Our theme song is Sevens by Nathan Burke, performed by Nathan and John. Interrupting John theme and additional voices by Taylor Isaac Gray. You can reach John directly on Instagram and Facebook at Ross Safari or by email at rossafaripod@gmail.com. Ross Safari is part of the Daydreamer Media Network. Now, stop listening to me and go visit a zoo.